Procrastination comes with a price. A lot more people are learning that these days. If you put off gassing your vehicle until tomorrow, it's going to cost you about another quarter a gallon at least. There are several reasons for the rise in the price of gas and oil, with Russia being one of the top ones. With us now to discuss the mechanics of all this, along with the best path to resolve it, is the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Energy and Environment, Myron Ebel. Thanks for being here today, sir.
Thank you for having me.
And learn more about the Competitive Enterprise Institute, along with the Center for Energy and Environment, on the web. It's CEI.org. And as I said in the introduction, I don't think it's much of an exaggeration. You can go past your digital display on your nearby gas station. Maybe even at this point now, from when you go to work and you come home from work, you're going to see a different price. And, well, if you look at the stats, the most recent stat we have, Russian oil importing made up 7.8% of U.S. oil stockpile in use. Should the absence of that 7.8% be reflected the way it's been in the prices right now?
Well, you know, it's one of the factors that's leading to higher gasoline prices. But, you know, this started as soon as President Biden took office on January 20th, 2021. He started immediately to take actions that were designed to constrict and limit the amount of oil production and natural gas production in the United States. You know, the first day he got back from the inaugural parade and he signed something getting us back into the Paris Climate Treaty. He suspended oil and gas leasing on federal lands and federal offshore areas. He canceled the Keystone XL pipeline. We could go on, but that was just a start. But there have been many actions since then. So when Russia invaded Ukraine, the United States was not in a good position because demand has been coming back for energy as the economy has come back from the shutdown. But he's badmouthed the oil and gas industry, and he's taken actions to undermine their ability to respond to that increasing demand. And so when we get Russia invading Ukraine, the U.S. was in a very weak position to respond to it in a positive way.
Just magnified the fact there's no way to counter that loss of that 7.8%. And if you look at current domestic production, the stats I was able to find since Biden took office, we've gone down anywhere between, depending on the stat you believe, anywhere between 2 to 3 million barrels a day in production.
Yes, well, you know, I don't want to get too far down into how far production has gone down, because production is going to come back. There's no doubt about it. Even with all of the Biden actions to re-regulate the energy sector after Trump did so much to deregulate the energy sector, production is going to come back somewhat just because of the high prices. I mean, you know, producers respond to high prices. If they've got a barrel of oil sitting around, they're going to try to get it, you know, into the pipeline, into the refinery. So there will be some increases in U.S. production in the next few months, and I'm sure President Biden will take credit for that. But it's really due to the high price, and I think, you know, there is spare capacity in the U.S. Industry, and there's even more spare capacity in the Middle East with Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. So I expect that the high price will bring more oil to market, and maybe we'll start. Maybe gas prices won't keep going up every day. I don't want to forecast the future, but I think you know, at some point we're gonna see at least a leveling off. I don't know whether that'll be at $5 or $7, but I guess it's already $7 in California. I don't know.
Yeah, close to, and I think probably even more in Hawaii, just because of the nature of the fuel
right.
Economy and transportation of product. But anyway, you referenced oil leases, and well, I think one fact that people don't understand is not every oil lease is a winning lottery ticket. Some of them turn out good, some of them don't. But what are some of the facts versus some of the claims about oil leases that the Biden administration has been making?
Well, it's a very complicated system, which the Bureau of Land Management is in charge of. And So the federal government owns a lot of land out west and in Alaska, and then they own they have the subsurface rights to a lot of control to offshore areas beyond the state boundaries, which go about usually 3 to 12 miles, it depends. The federal government identifies areas working with the oil industry and gas industry. They identify areas that have potential on federal lands, not national parks or wilderness areas, but just general BLM lands mostly. And they then put these out for auction. And somebody wins the auction, pays his money, and he has now a lease for a certain period of time, several years, to drill an exploratory well. And if there's oil there, that producer will then try to start production there. Well, the Biden administration suspended all new leasing there, and even though a judge told him he couldn't do that, they haven't started it up again. So what's the problem when you hear that there are 9,000 leases out there that aren't being used or something? Well, if you drill a well and you find something, you might immediately discover that you need more than that lease that you have. You might need some, because we have horizontal drilling now. So wells go straight down and then they go sideways horizontally for maybe a mile or two. Well, you might discover that you need more leases to cover where you want to drill, but you're not going to start production until you have those leases. And if the BLM has said, sorry, we got a moratorium on leasing, you're not going to be able to develop that well. The other thing is that even once you've won the auction and paid your money, you have to get a permit to drill. Some areas, let me give you the worst example. Private land in Texas, to go to Texas and get a permit to drill, it takes 2 days. The BLM office in Carlsbad, New Mexico, across the border, also in the Permian Basin, it can take half a year. Mm. So that's the problem. It's government holdups and obstacles.
Everyone, Myron E. Bell, who is the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute Center for Energy and Environment, on the web at CEI.org, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. A lot of the alternative ideas, of course, involves alternative energy, which I find challenging and comical in a way, because when you think about electric vehicles, it takes electricity to charge electric vehicles. What's it take to create electricity? Fossil fuels.
That's right. The other problem is with the shale oil and gas revolution, which started in 2007 or so in a noticeable way, and then the Trump deregulatory actions from 2017 to 21, the United States became the world's energy superpower, the largest producer of oil and gas. So we are now producing more oil and gas than we are using up until the end of the Trump era. That's changed somewhat since Biden came in, but we're still the world's largest oil and gas producer. So we are very close to energy independence for the first time since 1957, I think. We actually achieved it during a couple of the Trump years. And the people who promote electric vehicles and renewable energy want to trade that energy independence for total dependence on critical minerals used in producing electric batteries for vehicles to China. Because not only does China produce the majority of the minerals needed to make an electric vehicle, they also process a lot more. So, for example, most of the cobalt comes from Congo in Africa, but nearly all of it is processed in China. So we would become very dependent on, much more dependent on China than the world is on Russia. And that's what we're being asked to do. And so I don't think it's a very good trade. And I think people really ought to, in light of the invasion of Ukraine by Russia and the threats that China is making to Taiwan, I think we ought to reconsider whether we want to become totally dependent for a bunch of critical minerals on China.
And certainly dismantling one aspect of energy before assembling the other is not a logical path to take,
right,
either.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Could the high price of gas that we're seeing right now actually bring about a call for a return to domestic production by those who are either fence-sitters or have been, well, convinced to be against domestic production and cause that 13, 14 million barrels a day go down to the current 10 to 11 million?
I hope so, and it should, and we'll have to see if it does. Now, but, you know, going back to the renewables needing a lot of exotic minerals like lithium and cobalt, America has a lot of mineral deposits. It's a highly mineralized country, and yet we can't produce it here. You would think that the people that are promoting electric vehicles and windmills and solar panels would say, well, if we're going to do this, we have to change our laws and our permitting system so that we can actually open mines in this country in less than 20 or 30 years of permitting and court battles. But no, they're saying, oh, no, we couldn't possibly, you know, the Biden administration has canceled big mining projects since they got in. I hope that you're right, that we will revisit the idea that we need to remove the regulatory shackles that are preventing oil and gas production from going up, and coal production too, for that matter. But I'm not sure. Well, I hope so. It should happen, but we'll have to see.
And to keep the door open for the alternatives, if we did domestic production of the minerals that are needed to create that aspect of energy, that would more than likely drive costs down on what is still currently,
yep,
an expensive alternative.
That's right. Yes. No, absolutely.
We've been talking with the director of the Comparative Enterprise Institute's Center for Energy and Environment, Myra Nebel. CEI.org is the website to learn more about this and the other topics of their focus. Mr. Ebel, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.